Throughout the past 70 years, China has been at the receiving end of numerous uninvited and mostly unwarranted criticisms.
Not everyone is happy with the signing of a Hong Kong bill. This is Friday, November 29th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead on our program, one North American city has seen a huge inflow of people head its way from Hong Kong. North Korea chooses the American Thanksgiving holiday to shoot some missiles into the air. And our Australia correspondent tells us what's happening to that country's population of koalas. This is VOA Asia. Thousands of Hong Kong protesters gathered in that city center Thursday to stage a Thanksgiving rally in response to Donald Trump's approved legislation backing Hong Kong protesters. The legislation signed by Trump was approved unanimously by the U.S. Senate and all but one lawmaker in the House of Representatives last week. The law also threatens to impose sanctions for human rights violations. The Chinese Foreign Ministry was not happy with the U.S. president's decision to sign the Hong Kong measure. Foreign Ministry spokesman Gong Shuang said regarding the U.S.'s act of interference in China's internal affairs and harming of China's interest, China will take strong measures and firmly retaliate. Shuang added the United States would shoulder the consequences of China's countermeasures if it continued to act arbitrarily in regards to Hong Kong. The former Hong Kong chief executive, Leung Chun-ying, also took a pro-China mainland stance as he spoke in Hong Kong.
Throughout the past 70 years, China has been at the receiving end of numerous uninvited and mostly unwarranted criticisms from the West on issues that do not touch on bilateral relationships. Some of these have become China bashing. These commentators believe that they are better and know enough about China and its past. After all these years, it is still beyond me as to why people in the West make it a habit of opening their mouths about other countries as if they had done better dealing with their own domestic problems.
Conversely, Hong Kong's pro-democracy activist Joshua Wong addressed the rally Thursday night, countering that charge of other countries taking action against China.
People might ask, is inviting foreign country interference in Hong Kong? And my comment is Hong Kong being recognized as the global city is a must for us to seek for international allies and international community to recognize the unique status of Hong Kong as the global financial center and a world city.
Several hundred people also gathered outside the Polytechnic University, where police entered after a nearly two-week siege. Crowds sang the protest anthem, Glory to Hong Kong, while waving their phone torches in the air. Hong Kong police entered Polytechnic University earlier on Thursday and said they were searching for evidence and dangerous items. It was not clear whether any protesters remained on the campus at that time. About 5,800 people have been arrested since the unrest broke out in June over a proposal to allow extraditions to mainland China, with the numbers of protesters increasing exponentially in October and November as the violence escalated. The unrest marks the most serious challenge to Chinese President Xi Jinping since he came to power in 2012. We invite you to read more on a top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. A four-day rally that had lifted world stocks to near record highs stalled on Thursday after China said it would retaliate for U.S. legislation backing Hong Kong's protesters, leaving investors concerned as to the extent of the Chinese response. Pakistan's Supreme Court limited the 10-year extension of the sitting army chief to 6 months Thursday, as opposed to the 3 years the government wanted to grant him. A former employee of the British consulate in Hong Kong, Simon Cheng, who accuses China's secret police of kidnapping and torturing, has filed a complaint to Britain's Office of Communications against China Global Television Network for having broadcast what he called his forced TV confession. You are listening to VOA Asia. We continue the bad blood that exists between the good segment, of the population of Hong Kong and Beijing has created a major gap between the two sides, not only in Hong Kong and the PRC, but throughout the world. One of those cities is the Western Canadian metropolis of Vancouver. That city became a haven for thousands of Hong Kongers during and after the 2014 umbrella movement. The latest Canadian census shows more than 74,000 people made the move from Hong Kong to Vancouver. That was a 2016 census. Although there was not yet an official count of how many have made that move since the current Hong Kong protest began 6 months ago, surveys of real estate brokers say it has again picked up, not as quickly as 2014, but still very active. I spoke with Timothy Cheek, the director of the Institute of Asian Research at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver.
There is broadly support for Hong Kong demonstrators in Vancouver, less so as the violence goes on, but it's mostly saying, please don't do that. But fundamental support for the concerns and issues for which they are demonstrating. There are a lot of PRC students and people recently from the PRC, and they have slightly different feelings. There are those who will, you know, protest the other way around, saying, you know, you can't split our country and things. But what I'm most proud of in Vancouver is we have a student dialogue set up by our students that gets Hong Kong mainland and Taiwan students together. They quite rightly mostly eat dim sum and watch movies, but they're trying to build bridges between the various Chinese communities we have here. And I think that is a way forward.
Happening now in Asia, Vietnam has jailed three more people for anti-government posts on social media platform Facebook, deemed to defame the ruling Communist Party and the government, state media, and police, said on Thursday. That brings the total imprisoned this month to five. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. North Korea launched two short-range missiles on Thursday, a move some analysts called a reminder that the clock is ticking to restart denuclearization talks. More from Reuters' David Doyle.
North Korea broke a month-long lull in missile tests on Thursday, its southern neighbor said, firing two short-range missiles into the sea off its eastern coast, a move analysts described as a possible Thanksgiving reminder to the United States. As the clock ticks down to a year-end deadline Pyongyang has set Washington to restart stalled denuclearization talks, the South Korean military's Joint Chiefs of Staff said the North appeared to have tried out its new multiple rocket launchers, sending two missiles 236 miles from the eastern coastal town of Yeonpo.
North Korea's act is unhelpful for efforts to ease tension on the Korean Peninsula. The military expresses strong regret and urges the North to stop any action that raises military tension.
Analysts said the launch could be a message to the U.S. A display of weapons development progress on the anniversary of North Korea's 2017 test of an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of hitting the U.S. mainland. Thursday's was the first such launch since the end of October, when two suspected missiles were fired, again into the sea, between the Korean Peninsula and Japan. Japan's defense ministry said Thursday's launch did not enter its airspace or the waters over which it has rights. But Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said it poses a serious threat to the international community. Denuclearization talks with the U.S. stalled in October, with Pyongyang demanding that Washington lift sanctions and end joint military drills with South Korea, as well as threatening to walk away from negotiations.
Reuters' David Doyle reporting. Coming up, concern over the plague in a part of China. This is VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/current.
News from VOA Asia: South Korea will idle up to a quarter of its coal-fired power plants between December and February to help limit air pollution, while its remaining plants are expected to supply sufficient power, that according to the Energy Ministry. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. VOA Asia continues. A fourth person in northern China has been diagnosed with a plague this month. That's according to officials, as a flea and rat eradication campaign was carried out by the local government. The government in central Inner Mongolia said a herder who had been diagnosed with bubonic plague was currently being treated in isolation and was in stable condition. Another person was diagnosed with bubonic plague in Inner Mongolia's Shilin-Golig on November 16th, more than 400 kilometers away. And in mid-November, two patients from Inner Mongolia were moved to Beijing for treatment of the highly contagious pneumonic strain of the plague. Before word of these latest two patients was made known, I spoke yesterday with Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the U.S. National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease at the National Institute of Health outside Washington. His message: don't panic.
The fact is, when people think about plague, they think historically about the great plagues in history, which have wiped out tens of millions of people. So there's a degree of really unjustified panic associated with plague. These are two people that were diagnosed with plague today in 2019. And for many, many, many years, plague is a disease that's entirely treatable with an antibiotic. Particularly if you get people early, you could prevent it. I mean, there are multiple types of plague. There's bubonic plague, which is less serious, which is swelling of the lymph nodes. And then there's pneumonic plague, which is the one that you worry about, and a rare one called septicemic plague. The pneumonic plague is one that spreads from person to person through the respiratory route. And that's what people think about when they hear someone has plague, because they think of the historic destruction that happened throughout the world with the outbreaks of plague. But I think that these are unjustified. They're understandable. But what we're seeing is fear and panic about a potential major outbreak when there are two people in China who have the plague. And if you look every year throughout the world, there are these intermittent one-off or two-off plagues. Every once in a while, you have an outbreak. For example, last month, we had a situation in Madagascar where there was an outbreak of plague. It spread certainly more than you would have liked. It spread beyond a few people. But that's an unusual situation.
What kind of plague is this among the two people in Mongolia?
It looks like they had the pneumonic plague, which causes high fevers, shortness of breath, and can lead to death. As I mentioned, it is treatable with antibiotics. But the two people who had plague in China had pneumonic plague.
How closely do you follow this happening throughout the world? I think that's your job, right?
Right.
So are you in touch with them? Because there is some evidence that China is trying not to overplay it. Is that correct? And Mongolia?
Well, I think that they are appropriately not overplaying it, because it's not something that they should panic about. That's the point.
This broadcast is not for a U.S. audience. It is for an audience throughout Asia. So what is your message to the people of Asia, particularly those in Mongolia?
The message is, do not panic, that the health authorities are on top of this, and there really is no cause to panic. That's my message.
So what's being done? Do you know what's being done as far as treating these two people and making sure the rat population isn't spreading anything?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this was a one-off. There were two people who got infected. That was it. Now, there are no other cases of that. The people were treated at a hospital in Beijing. the Choyan Hospital in Beijing, and the it's going to end there, I would imagine. I do not think you're going to see anything further than that. Obviously, you have to have public health surveillance to make sure you're not missing anything. But just because two people came down with it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have an outbreak at all.
What about the rat population?
Well, that's a separate thing. I mean, the Chinese are trying to rid various aspects of China of rats. They've done a good job in some regions. Obviously, there still are a lot of rats that they need to get rid of.
The Ulankab government said earlier that it had sprayed almost 200 acres of land last week as part of rat and flea extermination work. Ulankab officials did not disclose the specifics of how the latest patient caught the plague, but did say the patient had been active in a plague-affected location prior to falling ill. According to the Chinese National Health Commission, a total of 5 people have died from the plague between 2014 and September of this year. In neighboring Mongolia, a couple died of the bubonic plague in May after they ate raw marmot meat, another carrier of the plague germ. You are listening to VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump faces a process that could end with his removal as President of the United States. Impeachment hearings underway now in the House of Representatives represents the beginning part of what is prescribed by the U.S. Constitution. In today's installment of American Impeachment, VOA Steve Reddish takes you through the responsibilities of the House of Representatives.
First steps toward any impeachment starts in the House of Representatives. It is the lower but larger of the two chambers of Congress, which passes laws and provides oversight of how government is run. Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution says the House of Representatives shall have the sole power of impeachment. That is all the guidance given as to how to conduct an impeachment. No rules, no parameters.
The impeachment process at this point in time is like a grand jury process. What they're doing now is they're just gathering evidence. They're going to make charges.
And with vague standards of high crimes and misdemeanors, impeachment is a political process, not a criminal process.
Impeachment is an inherently political process. The actual existence of specific crimes is really up to the Congress to determine.
In 1868, it took just 3 days for the House to go from a committee resolution to the impeachment of President Andrew Johnson. When Johnson defied Congress by firing the Secretary of War, the House overwhelmingly voted to impeach. Investigations of a break-in at Democratic Party headquarters at the Watergate Hotel eventually led to an impeachment inquiry of President Richard Nixon, a Republican. Facing charges of obstruction of justice, misuse of power, and contempt of Congress, Nixon resigned in August 1974 before the full House could vote on articles of impeachment.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Democrat Bill Clinton was impeached in 1998 for lying under oath about a sexual affair with a White House intern, but he remained in office because Clinton was acquitted after a trial in the Senate in 1999. Charges of perjury and obstruction of justice passed mostly along political party lines in the Republican-led House. Now, Democrats hold the House majority. Impeachment hearings against President Donald Trump center on his conduct of foreign policy, linking U.S. financial aid for Ukraine to a public announcement by Ukraine's president of an investigation into Democratic presidential candidate and former Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, and Biden's son. If the House approves articles of impeachment against President Trump, the case goes to the upper chamber of Congress, the United States Senate, for a trial. A guilty verdict means removal of the president. Unlike the House, where Democrats are in control, President Trump's party has the majority in the Senate. Steve Reddish, VOA News. Yet to reach a deal on...
This news break from VOA Asia, President Donald Trump paid a surprise Thanksgiving visit to Afghanistan, where he announced the U.S. and Taliban have been engaged in ongoing peace talks and said he believes the Taliban wants a ceasefire. In his first trip to the site of America's longest war, Trump arrived at the Bagram airfield shortly after 8:30 p.m. local time Thursday and spent more than 2.5 hours on the ground. Now on VOA Asia, more than 2 million hectares of land, including vast areas of forest, have been scorched in eastern Australia's bushfire crisis. Scientists are beginning to assess the toll on wildlife, particularly the already endangered koala populations. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Koalas are an Australian icon. The furry marsupials live in trees, and in parts of the country, they're in decline. They're listed as a vulnerable species under federal environment law in the states of Queensland and New South Wales, where bushfires have destroyed vast areas of habitat in recent weeks. Some campaigners have argued the koala is functionally extinct in parts of Australia. It's a controversial assertion that's not supported by many experts. They believe that to be considered to be functionally extinct, a species must have fallen to a few hundred or dozens, which doesn't apply to koalas. They are, though, often in peril. Several koalas have been rescued, burnt and dehydrated from the fires. Dozens continue to burn across eastern Australia, and experts say it's impossible to know the impact on native wildlife. A video of an Australian woman picking up an injured koala from a bushfire was widely viewed on social media. The animal later died at a wildlife hospital. David Lindenmeyer, a professor of ecology at the Australian National University, says droughts and fires can decimate koala populations.
What happens is that in many cases prior to these big fires, we have extensive drought periods. And that means that many species of animals are actually declining quite dramatically even before the fires hit. And so there's often what we call an interaction between the drought and then the fire. And then even the drought periods after the fire really impair the recovery process. So many species are dealing with multiple processes which are very hard for populations to recover from often.
Scientists fear that koalas could be heading toward extinction by 2050 if the destruction of their habitat continues. The picture, though, varies across the country. There are large and thriving populations of koalas in southern Australia. In parts of the states of Victoria and South Australia, marsupial numbers are considered to be overabundant and that valuable trees are being damaged by too many leaf-eating koalas. This is Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Sri Lanka's new government has announced sweeping tax cuts and reforms in a bid to provide relief to the masses ahead of parliamentary elections scheduled for early next year. The cabinet decided Wednesday to cut the value-added tax to 8% from 15% effective December 1st and to abolish seven other taxes, including a 2% nation-building tax paid by businesses. Cabinet also announced that all religious institutions are exempted from taxes.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists at the University of Massachusetts Medical School are reporting success in research that may someday help people see things at night that now require the use of very expensive night vision goggles. After injecting a special type of material called upconversion nanoparticles into mice's eyes, the researchers found that the little rodents were able to see in the near-infrared light range. The scientists say the night vision nanoparticles converts low-energy photons from near-infrared light into higher-energy light mice and other mammals can see. They reported that the mice maintained their night vision abilities for at least 10 weeks after the injection. Before trying this on humans, the scientists want to improve the safety and sensitivity of the nanomaterials. Researchers presented their findings at a recent meeting of the American Chemical Society. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you. Just visit our voanews.com program page. See us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. And we'd like to hear from you at VOA Asia Facebook and our email is voaasia@voanews.com. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Keith Holmes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and the VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hyung and Candace. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.